Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, Snoop Dogg performed at Kansas, and it seemed like they didn't know that Snoop Dogg was going to be the one who was performing. Also, we're going to kick off our series Sideline. We're going to talk to Spencer Hall of Banner Society. What we're going to be talking about is booster culture in college football. But first, anybody know what Daryl Morey thought he was going to do by sending out that tweet about Hong Kong? Anybody got any idea what was going on right there? And see, this is somewhat of a tricky situation for me as far as stories go, because, you know, things that have, like, social value to them and all that stuff, you know, that matters to me. Like, I pay attention to those things, and I have a respect for people who are willing to come out here and stand behind things that they believe in, especially when there's cost on the other end that they might have to deal with. I'm about that. Like, that's what I'm here for. You know, some of y'all look at me in that sort of vein. At the same time, man, I ain't never really been much on being stupid, right? Like stupid is never something that's gone very, very far with me. And I looked at what Daryl Morey did when he sent that tweet. That was a fight for freedom, stand for Hong Kong. And then a couple of minutes later, he wound up deleting it. And I was like, hey, dog, that was stupid. Stupid. Now, we can get into, like, well, obviously we can get into the cause, but my bosses don't really like that. But the cause itself is its own discussion. Where Morey threw me off on this was, were you willing to fight? Like, was this something that you were actually willing to stand for, right? Because if it was something that you was willing to stand for, then I'm right there with you, man. Go ahead and do that and take whatever comes after the fact. He wasn't trying to stand for that. He just sent something out because he thought, hey, man, I guess this will be cool. And then next thing you know, he started getting that backlash. And he looked up and that backlash was coming from Chinese folk. And he stopped and realized, yo, it's a billion of them and we like to sell them basketball. And he's like, yeah, you know, maybe I should take this down. And so he wound up taking it down. And this happened on Saturday night. I wasn't paying attention to it in real time when it happened on Saturday night. I do know I woke up on Sunday and I found out what had happened. And then I saw the text from, or the tweet rather, from Tillman Fertitta, where Tillman was like, yo, at D. Morey does not speak for the Rockets. We are in Japan, strictly here for basketball. We are not a political organization. And the funniest thing about it was at the end, he put in at ESPN. That man wanted to make sure everybody knew that Daryl Morey was not speaking for anybody but Daryl Morey. No. Don't get this twisted. No. I ain't say nothing like that. The Rockets ain't say nothing like that. The Rockets can't talk. Rockets don't talk. Rockets can't talk. Rocket is a rocket. It's an inanimate object. It is not capable of forming words. Daryl Morey, he is a person. That person did that. It ain't really got nothing to do with us. Oh, no. Can you imagine the look on Tillman Fertitta's face when he had found out that this had happened? What did he? Hey, give me my phone. Right? Like, somebody had to go run and get that phone for him. He ain't run that tweet by no PR. He didn't call anybody else to be like, how do you think we should handle this? He was like, no, first things first, let me do what I can right now. And when you think about it, it took like a full 24 hours after Fertitta had sent that before there was anything big, like before the story even really kind of blew up. He just immediately knew, oh, this is bad. This is real bad. This is a problem, and this has to be fixed. Now you stop and imagine what it had to be like for them folks at the NBA when they saw that. And they're like, he did what? Like, what? Daryl? I didn't know Daryl knew anything about Hong Kong. They're like, yo, what are you doing? Does this man not know that we sending everybody over to China right now? The NBA TV people, they over there. We got ESPN. We got a bunch of folks over there. We got the players. They're over there. They had Rachel Nichols on The Jump this morning talking about what was going on. And I got to be honest with you, Gabe, I don't know if I would have shown up for that.
Rachel had tweeted out that there was supposed to be a park dedication that was done on behalf of the NBA and the Nets.
Yeah.
And they had to cancel that. It's not good, right?
Hey, man,
now.
Let me ask you this, right? You traveled overseas, right? Yeah. You made some trips there. I'm just going to ask you, because I'll tell you my answer to this. When you go overseas, what is the most important thing that you do? Like, what matters most for you when you go overseas?
For me personally, getting immersed in the other culture, just experiencing it as a local zoo.
Yeah, see, for me, that's the second most important thing about when I go overseas. The most important thing, getting on the plane back home. Everything is secondary to getting on the plane back home. And I bet you hadn't even thought about it yourself. But in your mind, you didn't know it. But honestly, your most important thing, getting on the plane back home. If all of a sudden, like, let's say that you are in, I don't know, throw the country out there. You in France. And somebody tells you, yo, there's this palace that you got to check out. And you didn't even know about this palace, but you really want to see as much of that. You want to immerse yourself in the local stuff as much as you possibly can. And they're like, yo, let's go to this palace tomorrow. And you're like, oh, damn, man, I wish I could, but I got a flight at 9 o'clock in the morning tomorrow. You're not going to be prioritizing immersing yourself in the culture. You're going to get on the plane.
Yeah, that's privilege, right? Yeah. Not even the thought crossing your mind that you wouldn't be going home.
Yeah, yeah, no. The number one most important thing when I'm overseas is going on a plane. When I went to Europe this summer and I lost my passport there, I was like, okay, well, nothing matters more. I could be out here immersing myself in this Dutch culture. Nope, I'm immersing myself in this American consulate because I need to get my passport because nothing is more important when I'm overseas than coming back home. And now you're going to send people over there with microphones whose jobs are to talk and to opine on these matters. And they're going to be like, so what do you think, Bomani, about Daryl Morey and what's going on in China? I'd be out there signing just like James Harden did. China's great. We love the fans. We love the enthusiasm. We love, you know what? I apologize. You saw that James Harden had to apologize for this, and James Harden ain't got nothing to do with nothing. He's like, yeah, we apologize. Because everybody, I mean, I think he's trying to sell some shoes also. But on top of selling shoes, they trying to get back on the plane home. You remember when UCLA went over there to China last year and them boys got caught boosting in the mall? You remember that?
I do, and what's interesting about it is the same individual, Joseph Tsai, who's now the yes. owner of the Nets, was also at that time acting as kind of a
liaison,
you know, in between UCLA and the Chinese right. government trying to defuse the situation.
That's right, and when the boys was over there, the number one concern was, how do we get them back on the plane home, right? Let us get back home. Man, they got a whole bunch of people over there that's going to be asked a whole bunch of questions in a place where this willy-nilly free speech stuff that we do over here, it don't play the same way over there in China. They got a different attitude about this stuff. That's just not how they see it. We need to get on this plane home. I might fake sick if they send me over there to be there. Man, I don't know how to be myself under these circumstances. I don't think I could do it. Like, one thing I do think is interesting is that very often in the United States, there are a lot of us who challenge the country to be what it purports to be, right? So we claim that you got freedom of speech and all of this stuff, and we challenge this country to actually live up to what those ideals are, right? So go beyond just simply some technical, you can say whatever you want, but also that people should be able to feel free in the name of non-hateful expression. Like, this is something that we believe that you should be able to do. But you got to understand, that is not an ethos that is shared around the world. Not everybody believes in that. Like, not everybody's down for that. And in China, no, they're not really down for that. Like, that First Amendment makes us pretty unique to a lot of places in the world. Like, even if you are the most harsh critic of the United States, you go around the world and you read some stories, man. Even if you don't think this place the best about those sort of things, it ain't the last, okay? And so Adam Silver put out a statement today, because, God, imagine what this is like for Adam Silver, right? So Adam Silver put out a statement today that said he was not apologizing for Daryl Morey. He was not going to police the free speech of the employees of the league and the players, which is the kind of thing that he has to say for what's going on over here. Man, the state-run TV station in China, they were like, nah, there is no free speech when it comes to matters of Chinese sovereignty. They're like, no. Free ain't free when it comes to that. They just got a totally different attitude about this whole situation. And now everybody, I don't know how any of this is going to end. Because for the NBA, look, you can make the argument that the NBA had been hypocritical about this because they encourage people to make statements about social conditions in the United States. And now all of a sudden you say something about China and it looks like a problem. And yes, Adam Silver says they're not apologizing for Daryl Morey, but they damn sure wish that Daryl Morey had not said anything about it. My disagreement with people when they say that this is hypocritical, it's not a matter of me saying that it's not hypocritical to say these things. But if you think that there's a measure of hypocrisy, the hypocrisy took place when they decided they were going to do business in China in the first place. Like, the Chinese in this matter have not done anything that anybody finds to be terribly surprising. In fact, these are all things that we think are, that most of us would think were foreseeable. Like, the Chinese didn't pull a fast one on you, but they're like, oh yes, you'll be able to say whatever you want to criticize our culture and government. And then you did it and they're like, wait a minute, now you can't do that. No. No, we knew what this was from the jump. We got this long list of companies that have had these situations involving China and people saying things about them and the Chinese coming back and laying down the hammer and people not being with it. None of this is new. None of this is something that we have not encountered before. They knew what this was when they decided to do business with China. The thing about China is it's got 1.5 billion people in it. Billion with a B. That's something like 1/6 of the world population. They deep as hell over there, right? And what do they like? They like basketball. And what does the NBA want them to like? Basketball. They want them to like as much basketball as they possibly can. They want them to like more basketball. And so they decided, like just about everybody else, that we're going to go into this market. We wish to gain access to this market. And once they're there, you wind up kind of sort of being beholden to the rules of that market. And the reason you become beholden to the rules of that market is you want that market more than that market wants you. NBA digital provider in China, they said that, look, if you were like had the Rockets listed as your home team on, I guess, what their version of the League Pass is, that they would allow you to switch it out for free, because the government seems offended by this. But it also appears that the people on the streets seem to be offended by this. Like, on one level, there is, you cannot kowtow to the Chinese government. Nobody feels really good about that idea. But there is a concept that people generally understand, which is you gotta kowtow to the consumers. Like, people generally get that one. Like, my disagreement with the Kaepernick situation in the NFL is that the consumers aren't nearly as offended as they've been purported to be. Right. Like, I think that what's happening with the NFL and Kaepernick has been more about people who have a legitimate political agenda and they have an interest. Basically, they shut down the first dude to break down the door. Everybody else who did what they did regarding protests and the national anthem and stuff like that were basically doing so with some measure of permission. Kaepernick was not. Therefore, it became more important to lay the hammer down on him because he was the one that didn't ask if it was okay first, right? Like, he is the picture of what is dangerous about these sorts of things. But I have never been convinced that there was actually any credible evidence that what happened with Kaepernick affected the bottom line of the NFL. I can't make that argument with what's going on over here with Maury and the Rockets in China, right? Like, they are telling me all kinds of things that speak directly to the idea of the bottom line, right? And again, do you think that Daryl Morey is a guy who sent that and was like, and you know what? If I lose my job, I just get fired. Hell no! He ain't think this out at all. He wasn't thinking about this as some measure of social rebellion or anything like that. He ain't gotten that far in his mind even in a little bit. He just sent something out and then was like, "Whoa, that did not go over the way that I expected that it would." And then he had to scurry, and then everybody else had to scurry. And what I don't know at this point is, I don't really know how this gets resolved. I said something on Twitter and people got mad at me like I was saying something ridiculous, but I think that this is a legitimate point that I'm about to make here. This thing, for me personally, as someone who like handles these stories and talks about them and gives you my interpretations of them, this is as intellectually challenging a story as I can recall that I have tried to talk about on one of these platforms. It has so many different levels, and people hit me back and they're like, "There are no levels to this. Either you stand up to the Chinese or you don't." And I'm like, that tells me you're stupid. Right? Like, if you were really going to stand up to the Chinese in the name of some principle based on the behaviors of their government, you stand up to them by not going over there in the first place. Right? Like, you don't even believe what you're saying if you think that the time, that now is the time to show some backbone with the Chinese. You don't even believe the nonsense that you're talking about, because the time to do it would have been before the money, if that was what you were really concerned about. But now you over there and now you getting that money and now you want that money. But the problem is you cannot silence Daryl Morey under these circumstances, because what you have done is effectively allowed the Chinese and the Chinese Basketball Association to dictate the value structure of what goes on in a major American institution. Like, the NBA isn't just a company. It isn't just a corporation. It is an institution, right? You are basically saying that the rules of this other country now officially apply to the United States. So, right? So you can't really do that. And just to be clear, there's an argument to be made that what Maury did was a fireable offense. there's an argument to be made that what he did now interferes with his ability to do his job. And if you don't believe me in the idea that this could be a fireable offense, if Maury were to get fired, do you think any other team would hire him? Do you think he would get another job? Because I don't think he would. And I don't think it's because these other teams are like, yeah, how dare you say something bad about China? They're like, dog, what were you doing? Like, where were you? And so that's where the league gets stuck. You got the, you know, columnists in the New York Times and all these other major papers, like columnists in the New York Times talking about how the NBA claimed to be the wokest league. And now look at what has happened. But the thing that happens there and reason those arguments are so disingenuous, they don't have a problem with what the NBA did or like the idea of the NBA doing this. They don't have a problem with that. They would have been down for that because they understand the bottom line of money. What those people are saying is, ha, 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 you're no better than the rest of us. Like, that's what's fundamental and underneath all of the arguments that are going to be coming from the other side on this one. So what do you do if you're the NBA? You're just going to sit around and be like, nah, we don't want this Chinese money. Clearly, you do want these Chinese money. You think the rest of these teams, like Tilmer Fertitta, he wants this Chinese money. Like, for now, he's like, yo, Daryl's my general manager. I'm not going to fire him. But if he has to fire him, he is going to fire him. Tilmer Fertitta's whole thing, we are not a political organization. He don't want nobody out here talking about none of it. None of it at all. He is as down for silencing people as the Chinese government is, right? The difference is he's talking about doing it in the name of money. And people in the United States are able to respect the idea of doing something like that in the name of money. They generally get it. It just so happens that we're dealing with like the creeping superpower of China and everything else that goes along with it. And so there had to be a bunch of people sitting in those offices like, Tom, what the hell are we supposed to do? I can't imagine how many people went there on that statement that they put out that Adam Silver had to apologize for. Bro, I can't imagine how many people working on that. How many drafts that thing had going back and forth. And they still got it wrong. They still got it wrong. Then they put it out. And when it went out in China, they translated it much differently and made it seem far more apologetic than it was. And by the way, the apologies have not satisfied the Chinese. Take a little time and read what the situation is with China. In Hong Kong, like I'm really not telling you anything about opinions. I know this. I realized that I did not know that much generally speaking about Hong Kong and its relationship with China. Like I knew it used to be a British territory, then it became a Chinese one. Even if you just flip it through the wiki, like give it a read. I think it's something worth doing just like to give you more knowledge, generally speaking, even if we weren't talking about this. But there also seems to be something fundamental on this issue. And the side dude, the guy who runs Alibaba, who owns the Nets, he mentioned this just a little bit. But what I think Maury did here that has been lost is not simply a criticism of the Chinese government, but he really, really stepped in a briar patch of sorts on this particular issue. And the issue being the idea of Chinese sovereignty and the idea that mainland China should all belong to China. There's something very particular that is going on here with this issue. I also ask you to read up on these things because I get the feeling that if you watch some videos of what's been going on the last few months over there, you would understand why Maury did step into it. Like I could see why he decided to send the thing that he decided to send. But I tell you my general rule on stuff like overall, but also when it comes to international politics, I ain't really stepping into nothing where I can't handle no follow-up questions. And what Daryl Morey couldn't do was handle follow-up questions, nor was he prepared at any point to deal with any sort of backlash because he just thought he was sending out a meme that would be cool to send out on the Twitters. That was just what he thought. That was what he figured. And what he did was legitimately create an international incident. And now the NBA is looking at itself basically saying, are we going to let the Chinese tell us how to run our league? And the answer is, I guess it depends on how bad you want that money. And I'm going to ask you this. How bad you think they want that money? Anybody that wants to make this easy really isn't paying attention. I'm over here paying attention. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about Snoop Dogg at Kansas. But first, you've heard us talk about Hims and how they're helping guys look their best. If you haven't yet, it's time to see what they're all about. Look, 66% of men lose their hair by age 35, like me. And yeah, it's a big problem. So why do guys sit there and do nothing about them? They can turn to medicine and science. Once you've noticed thinning hair, it can be too late. But there's a solution, and it's for Hims.com. It's one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. Hims is helping guys be the best version of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat their hair loss. Prescription solutions backed by science. Now look, Hims is created by a guy who knows some men's health conversations are easier online than in person. So no more awkward in-person doctor's visits, long pharmacy lines. For Hims connects you to real doctors online. It can save you hours. It's completely confidential. You answer a few questions, a doctor will review, and if they determine it's right for you, they can prescribe you medication to treat hair loss that is shipped directly to your door. Get the hair loss treatment everyone is talking about. Order now. My listeners can get started with the Hims Complete Hair Kit for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last and subject to doctor's approval. See website for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy somewhere else. Go to forhims.com/Bomani. That's forhims.com/Bomani. Forhims.com/Bomani. All right, so it's that time of year. I was going to call it Midnight Madness, but it ain't really Midnight Madness no more with college basketball, but they do their madness. Gabe, are you much a college basketball guy?
I mean, from the standpoint that I went to UCLA and the team is or has been good there, but I'm also very fair weather, so if they're not good, I'm not paying attention.
Oh, yeah, I kind of sort of forgot that you went to a college basketball school. Were they any good when you were there?
They had Shabazz Muhammad and Kyle Anderson and a couple other dudes.
Yeah.
So they were all right. They were kind of over-promised and under-deliver type of group.
Well, that was the team that got the coach fired, right? Yeah. Okay. So, like, I don't know how they do that at UCLA, but, like, you know, I lived in Durham, North Carolina for 10 years, and I've been around a lot of college basketball. And I've done North Carolina's, like, you know, opening prayer, Midnight Madness type of thing. It's Evening Madness now because they realized there was no point in making people wait till midnight. So just go ahead and dial it up and let you do it. And so it's the first practice. It's a celebration of sorts. And I know in Chapel Hill, I don't really know so much about how they do things in Lawrence, Kansas, but in Chapel Hill, it's really a community event, right? It's going to be a lot of kids and they do a lot of dancing and stuff. That's why Roy was out there doing the electric slide with them and all of that. Like that's what it is. Like, this is less a college event than it is a community event. And so Kansas did theirs, and you know, Kansas has got their little situation going right now with the NCAA and Adidas and everything that happened. And a lot of these schools, they like to have performers come in. Normally performers that like the kids are into because it's a recruiting event. You normally bring a bunch of your recruits in for the Midnight Madness and stuff like that. And Kansas, they went with Snoop Dogg. And I don't know how much Snoop registers with the recruits that you're going to be getting. I kind of sort of feel like the more Snoop resonates with the recruits you're going for, the more likely they are to fail a drug test. Could be wrong. Maybe I'm assuming. But, you know, that's what it is. And so Snoop was the performer at Kansas Midnight Madness. That dude apparently was doing, what's the song with Akon? I Want to Love You. Isn't that what they call it on the radio?
Yeah, that is the clean version.
Yeah, I see you winding, grinding up on the pole. I don't even know if he did the clean version of this there anyway, but it's a stripper song, right? It's a strip club song. It's about that. And, well, Snoop had stripper poles on the stage. He had women that were dancing on the stripper poles, but were not stripping, FYI. But they were getting down on the stripper poles, and Snoop was walking around with a gun that shot money. Yeah, so we had that part that did happen. I also listened to a part where he did Gin and Juice, and he did not do the Gin and Juice versions that they was doing on MTV, where it would be like rolling down the street, smoking. No, he was like smoking endo. Dropped a few, of his extended versions of the B word while he was there. And of course, there were people who were mortified, absolutely mortified by this. Bill Self seemed to be mortified. The donors did not seem to be happy. The athletic director had to put out a statement that he said that they should have known. They told Snoop that he was supposed to do a clean show. And when he said that he was bringing acrobatic dances, the athletic director, Jeff Long, said, "I should have known what that meant." Gabe, do you think he thought that Snoop was bringing acrobats?
Yeah, I guess that just goes to show how out of touch some of these folk are.
Yeah, although to be fair, I wouldn't have expected him to have pole dancers, right? I would not have expected that to be the case. That being said, those poles didn't magically appear. Somebody brought them off the truck. Like, there were people that knew what this was going to be as it was setting up. The problem was the people that really needed to be out here making decisions, none of them bothered to go check and see what the deal was. And you know what I think their mistake was? When they called Snoop Dogg up to do this show, maybe they thought they were ordering a different Snoop Dogg. Okay, like, you know, there's a whole bunch of different Snoop Dogs, right? Like, I don't know if you can still get, like, the Snoop Doggy Dog. Maybe that's been taken out of rotation. You can't get that one, so he's not necessarily going to show up with, like, the flannel and the Scully and all that, you know? Like, and throw, like, maybe you're not going to get that Snoop Dogg. Maybe that was not available. But there's the Snoop that hangs out with Martha Stewart, right? Right? Maybe that's the one they thought they were ordering. There's the Gospel Snoop. You remember him? There's, like, the do funk song Snoop. There's that one. There's also the Rasta Snoop. Okay, maybe they thought they were getting the Rasta Snoop.
Snoop Lion, you mean?
Yeah. Maybe they thought they were getting him. Or did they think they were getting Coach Snoop? You know, Snoopy out here coaching the kids in football. Maybe they thought they were getting Coach Snoop. Because the Snoop they got is kind of Snoop. Like, there was no surprise at Snoop Dogg doing that particular show, right? Here's what I think may have happened in part. I think this is actually fairly plausible. Okay. So Kansas calls Snoop. He says yes. Okay. Midnight Madness, again, is a community event as much as it is just a college event. But I feel like what Snoop gave them was his college show. Does that make sense? He gave them the show that he does when he performs at a college. Because if he was just performing at Kansas, this isn't a story. Right? Like, nobody's putting it in the newspaper that Snoop has triple poles at a concert. We put it in that Snoop has triple poles at a concert at Midnight Madness. He just gave them the show that he gives when he goes to college, baby. Which, by the way, from what I have been told and what I saw in the videos, the people seem to love it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Gabe. You were born in 1991.
Yes, you're right about that.
Okay. I don't think there's any way for me to explain to you, like, the magnitude of what Snoop Doggy Dogg was in 1993 and 1994. Right? Like, he was the scariest man in America as far as most people were concerned. This dude had the number one album on the charts while a murder charge was pending, right? Kevin Powell once made the point about Snoop. He referred to Snoop as being rap's first organic superstar, right? Like Run DMC, they had like costumes and get-ups. And, you know, I mean, not a get-up, but you know what I mean? Like they were very clearly projecting a certain image and it was manicured. Like it was curated. Like they knew what they was doing. Snoop is out here on TV throwing up gang signs, getting his hair braided. Like they shooting all the videos like right in the neighborhood with him as like person in the neighborhood, not just walking down the street and all, you know, with people behind him and stuff like that. Like, so this is a real live Crip that's out here doing real live Crip things, standing up on Saturday Night Live, throwing up the set, like all this stuff. There really wasn't nothing like this at the time, and he scared the hell out of people. Then 10 years later, it didn't even take this full 25. Like 10 years later, he's doing commercials with Martha Stewart because he's like a family-friendly sort of dude now. Like I think it's in part because he just became like a lovable stoner, and that was something that white kids were able to relate to. But he is just a part of mainstream America in a way that you never would have guessed back then. And the wild thing about it is that there's like 8 or 9 different Snoops, except they're all the same Snoop. They're all him. They're all him. They're all the same Snoop. But somehow there's like 10 different Snoops. And somehow Kansas got the Snoop that we all know as Snoop, but thought that they were getting another Snoop. Okay, all the donors who might have called and complained, I guarantee you. Now, granted, most of them are probably this case anyway, just because of, you know, how long it takes for you to get money. But they're all 55 or under. They all are. And here's how I tell you why I feel confident saying they're 55 or under. Because if they are under 55, then that means that when Snoop hit the scene, that they were under 30. Okay. And for people who were under 30 during that era, I'm telling you, there's nothing more unifying in America than G-Funk. America loves G-Funk. Top to bottom. The G-Funk brings people together. And that is why, for a very long time, I have campaigned for a G-Funk Super Bowl. And if there's anything that I'm upset with Snoop about at this thing in Kansas is, he has really messed up the possibility of the G-Funk Super Bowl, because now they're going to be scared of him. If he had gone out there and given them a Martha Stewart Snoop show, we could have kept his roots up. And then he could have brought the stripper poles and the money gun and the gin and juice to the Super Bowl. And that would have been so much better. Isn't there an L.A. Super Bowl coming up soon? I believe there's an L.A. Super Bowl coming up soon. Isn't it in Inglewood? Like, Snoop's not from Inglewood, but close enough. You know what I'm saying? How you going to have a Super Bowl in L.A. and not have no G-Funk? How you not going to have no G-Funk? So we need some G-Funk. So Snoop, lay low for a couple years, and then we going to do it big at the G-Funk Super Bowl. Hey, man, I just want to take a brief moment right fast. Mention something you guys may not have seen. This was announced, but my good buddy Michael Smith is leaving, or has left, I guess is a better way to put it, ESPN. He's going on. He's got a venture he's going to be working with in Los Angeles. It's going to be kind of like he got some clout. He got an executive sort of position, man. Like, all of us who do talent type stuff, we all got all kinds of ideas of how to run companies and everything else. But in the end, we just get on camera and go talk about stuff, man. This dude's going to be over there making some decisions at an operation. And that's really dope. But I would want to just take, for me, at the very least, As I say to some of you guys, didn't know this until I am telling you. I don't know if people realize this about Mike. And I got to know Mike, like, after I started working here. I didn't really know him before I worked here. So me and my man, Sherelle McMillan, he covers University of North Carolina sports. And we used to talk about this all the time. This is like back like 04, 05. And we'd look up and we'd see Mike Smith on TV. And it was like, yo, man, what are you not doing with your life? Right. Because me and Smith graduated from high school the same year. Like, he's like 1 year older than me, but we graduated from high school in the same year. Like, we are, in effect, the same age. And so I'm like 24, 25, scraping, trying to be a freelance writer, right? Just flunked out of graduate school. I got no idea, like, any path of how to get anywhere in this game. And, you know, this is something that I see myself as probably being, you know, something that I would like to do. And I don't know how to do this. I got no idea what it is. I'm just lounging around the house with my friends, my crib all junky, you know, everything else, like all of that stuff. This dude, the same age as me, had his first job at the Boston Globe. He's up here on a round the horn in PTI when he's like 22, 23 years old, all of this stuff. And killing it, right? And like, I talked to my man, Bruce Feldman, he's working at ESPN the magazine. He works at SI and at Fox now. And he's talking about like being at the combine and walking in the bar with Mike, and like, Mike's the man. Like, the second he walks in there, like, all like from play, you know, suits, scouts, everybody else, man. He's like, he walks in there and they all trying to go dap him up and be with that dude, you know, be like, to be around that cat. And I bring all that up because I really want some of y'all to understand that. And that is a rare, special dude who was doing rare, special things at points where people would love to get their careers at some point down the line to where he was when he was like 24, 25 years old. And he was good at it. You know what I mean? Like, real good at it. And of course, you know, you have some time that goes. And I remember, like, first time I talked to Mike on the phone, it was when Ben Roethlisberger got in his situation in Georgia. And I don't remember exactly what Mike's take was. It was about what the suspension ultimately was. And I believe that I was advocating for something much harsher. And he thought it should have been, he thought that what the NFL did was a little more, was probably right in the way that they went about it. And so I remember he called me and he was just like, hey, you know, I just want to ask you a question. I just want to talk to you about this. Because he's like, I cover the league. Like, I've been covering the league forever. I've been doing this for so long. I need to talk to somebody that's a step outside of this to see if I'm missing the forest for the trees, because I'm just so deep in this. And I remember I was sitting on the phone when he said that, and I was thinking to myself, like, yo, this dude wants my opinion on this? Like, are you serious? I think at that point I'd been on TV a little bit, but not a lot, you know? And I'm like, this particular dude wants to talk to me about this? And that was the wildest thing in the world to me, man. Wild, you know? And so, like, the idea that, like, I got to be a peer of that cat and I got to be cool with that cat as time went on was just kind of mind-blowing. Like, I went to Vegas this summer, man. It's me and him just kind of, like, hanging out. You know, talking about the game and, you know, talking about the business and talking about the world and just kind of talking about everything else or whatever. And it was like, for me, it was like one of those wild things where you go kick it with somebody and you're like, yo, I knew me and this cat was cool, but like, it's not even like, yo, we went on the trip and we got close. It's like, sometimes you roll with people in circumstances like that and you realized that you were close and you didn't know it. And again, for me, this is a mind-blowing concept because I spent a lot of the time that I was working in this, even if I wasn't doing so explicitly, like trying to get like that dude had gotten. Because that is a dude that you like try to get like. Like if you are in a position and making this kind of content is what you want to do in the end, what this dude did in the time that he was here is exactly the sort of thing that most people want to get like, you know? And that's the best way to put it this way. This is the best way to say this. This is something for everybody to consider if you work in this industry or you work around it or anything else. I remember my man Rod. Check him out, blackguywhotips.com. I think it was when I don't think it was high noon, I think it was when I started doing Highly Questionable. And I talked to him and I was like, yeah, you know, I think, you know, we started doing it. And I'm like, yeah, man, I think this is going to work. And I remember he hit me. He was like, nah, man. He said, I listen to a lot of these comedy podcasts, you know, and, you know, with people trying to, you know, that's what he's into, right? And he said, the thing I've learned from listening to people who do this is, it's great if you get a TV show and you really make it work and it turns into a huge success. But do you know how hard it is to just get a television show? Like, that is a victory, regardless of like the size of the show, the magnitude of it, or how big a deal it is. Just getting a TV show is a huge thing. Like, let alone getting the opportunity to do like a flagship TV show or like something that has an institution, like something that matters in that way. Somebody entrusting you with the idea of doing a television show, you have done a lot of winning just by getting in that position. And damn near everybody that does the kind of thing that I do, not everybody in this whole industry, but like the kind of work that I do, man, that's the kind of stuff that you hope to do. That is exactly it. All that. And that man turned 40 years old a couple of months ago. And at 40 years old, he checked like about all the boxes that somebody like me would like to be able to do in a career and is going on to do some things that he is very happy about doing. And I can say that as somebody who 15 years ago was trying to get like that dude, I feel like in a lot of ways, that's the kind of thing I'm still trying to do. So if no one else reminds you of this, or you do not hear it anywhere else, or if you have such an opportunity, salute that man. He deserved it. He had a great run doing stuff while he did it here, and I look forward to the great run that he's going to have doing stuff when he gets out. All right, so we did something a little earlier in the year called Baseline, where we did a dive into the NBA Supermax contract and the effects that had on the league and everything else. Well, this time we're going to try something new. It's called Sideline, and we are going to delve into booster culture in college football. We're going to do this every other Tuesday through October and November. It's going to be a four-part series in conjunction, by the way, with Banner Society. Check them out, BannerSociety.com, college football site. We have Stephen Godfrey of Banner Society. He will join us. He wrote a story a couple years ago about Bagman. That was fantastic. So we'll talk about some of that. We're going to talk to Marcus Spears of ESPN. We'll also talk to Joel Anderson of Slate, both Marcus and Joel. Marcus, more obviously than Joel, played college football. But we're going to start this off with my man Spencer Hall talking about just the general, what is the booster culture? You and I, this is maybe our favorite thing to talk about in college football is two people who are fascinated by college football, which is the crazy people around college football who just give away their money.
Boosters, baby. It's time to talk about the bag men, or at least the men who fill those bags. And I should point out at the top, by the way, almost exclusively men, almost exclusively rich men.
Interestingly, is there a woman, is there like a crazy female booster somewhere?
I can't think of a single lady booster who's really doing the kind of, you know, colorful, skullduggerous, sometimes unethical, sometimes outright illicit things that boosters do.
And you know why you can't find them? Because they're stupid. That's why.
You know, it's a measuring contest of sorts.
Yes.
And it's a measuring contest that women are particularly uninterested in, at least in this way, right? For the most part, the people doing this, there ain't one type or one way of doing it, right? Like every single person who's behind this vast system has a slightly different strat and a little sort of edge to the way they do things.
So, like, on your list, old boosters, right? Because you follow college football enough, you know that there are a few, like, highlight boosters, like names we know. Like, who's your number one?
And there are so many. You're asking me to pick one, and that's cruel. But I think my favorite booster of all time, when you go, oh, could I give you the prototypical big sort of, can I say swinging? Just let me give you, like, the loudest, most Texas kind of swinging, and that's this. Joe Gemmail. You and I both love Joe Gemmail. I introduced you, I think, to the greatest Texas deposition ever.
Yes. Where he's ready to fight right there.
He gets someone so mad, he meets the challenge, and then everyone realizes that they're over 50, wealthy, and would get winded quickly. That's what happens, all right?
Fat boy.
And he does at one point call another attorney, fat boy. In the thickest Texas accent you've ever heard in your life. Yeah, Joe Gemmail, like master of torts, raconteur, a guy who was worth about, you know, $1.5 billion, just giving money to the University of Texas, among other things. He was a philanthropist on his own, but he put his name on the field, famously, at DKR, at Texas, at their football stadium. And my favorite thing was after UCLA beat them 66-3.
Which I believe was the first game at Joe Gemmail Field.
Correct.
I think it was the day they dedicated the field.
Yes, yes. And he said famously that I paid all this money to put my name on the field, and how am I going to take my name off it? You know, how much I got to pay to take my name off the goddamn thing? Yeah, I think that was the actual quote.
Yes.
I don't think I'm actually coloring it up a little bit. I think I'm actually toning it down from what he said.
But the power of Joe Gemmail is when it wasn't going so great for Mac Brown at Texas, the thing that Mac did when he got there that everyone has said is the wisest move that he ever made was he hired Joe Gemmail as his lawyer. Right? Now, who knows how much legaling Mac actually needed in this time period, but Joe Gemmail was his lawyer, and that saved his job through the bad times.
Correct. Now, this is getting to the meat of what we're talking about when we talk about what do boosters do and how do they exercise their power? Because you can't outright buy a college sports franchise. You can come close, but technically you're not going to own it, especially if it's at a public university. It's just not going to happen. It's technically owned by the taxpayers of the state. However, as we all know, there's a lot of different ways you can flex. Gemmail would do it by protecting Mac Brown. He liked Mac, right? Joe Gemmail, by the way, having a personal intimacy with the Texas football program for years because he was a drinking buddy of Daryl Royal, who I will also put is no end to the connections here, right? When you get to guys who have this much money and are this wealthy and are sort of this charismatic and outgoing, which is one way to put what Joe Gemmail was, and a real complimentary way to put it, right? He also would go on these nights out on the town with Willie Nelson. So the person who's sitting here putting his name on the Texas football field itself, that guy is going out with Daryl Royal, the Texas football coach, and Willie Nelson. So he's not coming short of cash, and he's not coming without the intent to at least, you know, flex on them a little bit to exercise their power. And so much of this comes down to that, right? Just the need to either control, to push someone else around, to have their way.
Because I can is the explanation for so much booster stuff. And what gets lost in this is a lot of these programs, I guess it's changed now in more recent times because the television money is so much more. Donations could be 20 or 30% of an athletic department's budget.
Right. And they can be a bit more and have more impact if that person has more money. And there's an interesting thing that happens at scale here. You know, I started by talking about Joe Gemmail, who was at Texas. I don't know if you know this or not, but Texas, not short on money. They'll tell you. They're very fond of telling people that they are not short on money. Another thing are large boosters. They have a number of people who give large amounts of money to the football program.
It
is a problem, right? Now, if you want total control of a program, well, you probably want to pick some place that's either down on their luck or historically has been overshadowed because of the lack of resources, right? The recently passed T. Boone Pickens, himself kind of a colorful figure, not quite Joe Gemmail loud, but also real vocal, a corporate raider from the 1980s who came out of the oil industry. T. Boone Pickens managed to find himself in a position of extreme power at Oklahoma State, mostly because he had more money than everybody else. You know, that's the same story with Phil Knight. If you're one of these guys who can come in and be the biggest checkbook or the only real checkbook that matters at a place, Well, you can swing it, can't you? Right? At Texas, it's harder because there's going to be a competition. Everybody who's writing those checks wants to see who's got the biggest six shooter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get like a school like Texas A&M in regard to that, where the price of oil greatly affects the fortunes of the boosters. So when crude is riding good, everybody's winning. If oil prices fall, oh, you got a problem.
Yeah, and that doesn't just happen with things like people who are rich off commodities, right? Auburn had Bobby Lauder. To give you an idea of how long he was in play at Auburn as someone who mattered and who had sway and pushed people around, was appointed to the Board of Trustees at Auburn in 1983 by George Wallace.
I have been to the Bobby Lauder Center at Auburn, by the way.
It is quite a facility, is it not?
It was. They were very nice to me at Auburn. But he's a banker, right?
Yeah, was a banker. Was a banker. There was this whole 2009 thing that happened in the banking industry. Lauder took a bath. After that, his influence at Auburn began to wane. But not before a number of spectacular things that, despite his low profile, and this is the funny thing about Lauders, that whenever you read any profile of millionaire banker Bobby Lauder and mega booster Bobby Lauder, for years it would say, well, you know, he really maintains a low profile. Really? Because why am I reading about it? You know, all the time, if this is the guy who's really making all the calls there, because I shouldn't know his name. And instead, I know all of these things about Bobby Lauder. I know that in 1992, that the New York Times reported that Bobby Lauder and Auburn were looking at a number of possible coaches to take that job after Pat Dye. Don Nealon of West Virginia. Another one was Mack Brown of North Carolina. No shortage of people with experience, titles, conference championships, and presence applying for the Auburn gig. None of them got it. The guy who ended up getting it was Terry Bowden. And I know that Terry got it because he got all the answers for what they were going to ask him the night before from Bobby Lauder. Because he sat him down in a hotel room and said, son, this is what we're going to ask you. That's exactly what happened there. By the way, that's like one moment of intervention there. Naming buildings on Auburn's campus and helping to choose coaches is another. But sometimes they help fire them, too.
Well, didn't Bobby Lauder jump on the plane to go see Bobby Petrino and see if he wanted to be the head coach, even though Auburn had a head coach?
Yeah, he did that. Despite the fact that gainfully employed Tommy Tuberville still held that position. And in 2003, I believe, they made the trip up to Louisville to discuss things with one Bobby Petrino. Making it more interesting,
yes,
by the way,
yes.
Bobby Petrino, former assistant to Tommy Tuberville at Auburn. I'm sure that conversation went real well.
And then Auburn in 2004 went undefeated.
This is correct. Also, by the way, it set off a long chain of events that ended up threatening Auburn's accreditation with one of their accreditation agencies. It got complex.
And so the thing that's so interesting about this is, and everybody's got a different booster thing. Like, of course, the mammoth one is the SMU, we've got a payroll to meet Sherwood Blunt situation. Right? Like, and I love that 30 for 30 because it just explained, hey, man, in the Southwest Conference, all these guys are working in Dallas in the 80s. At these oil companies, in these buildings, and they want to brag about their favorite teams, and they got more money than they know what to do with. And so what they do with it is just throw it on their college football programs.
Yeah. And, like, if I can get across to anyone listening, this is bargain pimping. I mean, it really is. Like, to a billionaire or a hundred millionaire, a small amount of money and cast a very long shadow in these places, right? It's not like you need to control half the program. 20% will do. 10% will do. The budgets, they're real money, but they're not huge money. And you can do a lot with a little. And if you're somebody like Phil Knight, you can roll in and just, you know, control the place if you want to, right? Or as he did, do something really innovative and turn the whole thing into, you know, a marketing scheme for your product.
It is all so amazing. It just really, guys that just wake up and be like, I will, guys that will not throw a quarter at a bum on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
But they will throw money on these programs.
Oh, yeah. People who are in sort of ruthless industries, like who funds Kentucky football? It's coal money. There's a lot of coal money. No, and it's not, you know, that's not a big kind of program. Okay, let's keep going. What kind of money gets you to dangerous? Well, you know, Len Wexler money. The Len Wexler, who has his name on pretty much everything at Ohio State. Okay. It's the guy behind the Gap, the guy behind Victoria's Secret. You know, he did start it, but he bought it and turned it into what it became, you know, this former shopping mall retail baron.
The VF outlet malls, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that guy, just in terms of things he's attached to most recently, was the guy who was the only single client of Jeffrey Epstein. That's the kind of money that can pour into a program. And by the way, like Wexler is pretty similar to a lot of other huge boosters in that the athletic program is a piece of what they donate, right? They're giving to other things as well, you know, hospitals on campus or buildings or endowments, et cetera. But the one thing that everyone sees, the front porch of the university in a lot of cases, is the athletic program. And, you know, they're very conscious of that as well. They don't want their name on something that sucks, you know? And thus, when it comes time to exercise the power they hold, even though they're never going to see a dime out of it, they're going to take it.
Yeah, but like, who's, like, what are the schools that have boosters that aren't really good at this? Like, is it fair to say that at Tennessee now, that part of their problem is their boosters aren't that good?
You know, they're good at being there, right? They're definitely... They're definitely present. They definitely write checks. You know, Tennessee's like one of my favorite cases. They're not a unique case. There are a couple of these, but one of the biggest boosters, it's the Haslam family. And the Haslams, that name should be real familiar on two fronts, right? If you want like the ultimate kind of Tom Wolfe could not make this up in a novel about the South kind of thing, there's a Haslam that was the governor of Tennessee. And there's a Haslam who owns the Cleveland Browns. And they are part of the same family and the same business that, you know, got investigated by the FBI for skimming from their own contractors, I believe.
Not just any business. Flying J. Yeah, the key. It's Pilot Flying J. Like, you seen the Flying J truck stops? Yes, this is, they are truck stop barons. They are the rich man's Stuckies.
They were allegedly cheating customers and defrauding them. And the FBI kind of, you know, got on them. That's the kind of level of finance where, you know, if you mess up, the FBI gets into your books, right? The DOJ takes note. Those are the people who are also, you know, in charge of the Browns and to some extent the Tennessee football program. They're not the only donors to the Tennessee football program. If they were, we probably wouldn't have had the Civil War that we had, right? The internecine warfare that became the Tennessee coaching search. And it all starts from that, right? Like fundamentally, I think when the Schiano thing happened, people would say, man, we can totally blame the fan base. They don't understand what they're looking at. All of this starts with the decision makers and their own kind of like rivalries, faults, and fractures.
Well, let me tell you something else I think that is interesting that is happening. And I just thought of this right now, and I'm curious your view on this. So I am from Houston. We have a very interesting animal in college sports, which is the University of Houston, which I think is a far more compelling case, like thing than people realize. The University of Houston was at the forefront of Southern integration in football. Mm-hmm. They were at the forefront of integration in Southern basketball. They also have engaged at points in some of the most rampant cheating that anybody has ever had, with Bill Yeoman handing out stacks of cash in the locker room in the 80s, right? Like, this is what Houston has been. But Houston, I forget what year the university was founded, but it's like a relatively new school. It's smaller than all these other ones, but they got great geography and they have a huge alumni base and they got people who really, really, really want to win. And so at all these different steps in the process, they have been at the forefront of this is what we got to do to win. And now they have Tillman Fertitta as the guy who gives away all of their money. Now, we have all these other schools now that are popping up, like North Carolina Charlotte, for example, got themselves a football program. Liberty has a football program that they care a lot about. We are kind of getting to a place where we're going to get like generation two on some of these boosters because, hey, man, there's somebody that went to all these schools, like Georgia State, for example. One day, all Georgia State got to get is the right graduate, the right guy who wants his school to be the one.
The more money that piles into a program correlates with success. What was Oregon football before Phil Knight got serious about Oregon football? It was Oregon football pre-Phil Knight, which wasn't much, man. I mean, it was a place where Oregon hung its name on Animal House and Ahmad Rashad. That was about it.
Bobby Moore.
And like Steve Prefontaine, right? Now, note, like Steve Prefontaine, legendary runner, you know, huge figure, a myth. Mythical figure in American running, that's not going to carry you like Marcus Mariota will, right? It's just not going to do that. And that's really what we're talking about when we talk about, okay, well, do they matter? yeah, they especially matter to places like Houston, where Tillman Fertitta, another double owner, by the way,
yes,
right? Since he's right there on the Rockets and is very busy at the moment of this recording. He's learning all kinds of interesting geopolitical facts.
I'm up to my elbows, right? Like, he is from Galveston. I'd love to know, like, what idiom he uses to refer to what his situation is right now.
Busier than a dog with four asses, something like that. Yeah. He's, like, dipping deep into the idiom bag, right? To get his point across, right? And by the way, I really hope he uses one of those with like a Chinese translator who's like, what do you want me to do with that, man? We don't like, God, I speak, now you're asking me to speak three languages. Like when you get somebody into like deep country, yes, like that, this, yeah, now I got to be trilingual. Come on, man. I don't make enough money for that.
Yo, he's from the Galveston docks.
Yeah, it's,
yeah, and he runs casinos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that pretty much explains where we're going to have to start when hiring a translator, right? There's two people in the world who can do it. You can't pay them enough. The one place he doesn't need translation at all is that everything in college football speaks his language, which is money and hustle, right?
Yes.
That's it. He wants, like, Tillman Fertitta wants Houston in a major conference. You know, he wants Houston to compete for national championships. He'll go and snag another, like, hiring Holgorsen. There were a lot of legitimate reasons to hire Holgorsen, but you know what one real reason to hire Holgorsen was? And it was this, to show that they could do it.
Yep.
That's it. Not just that's our guy, but we have gravity, right? If you don't respect us, watch. We'll make you. We'll take your stuff. We'll take your recruits. We'll take a coach from a Power 5 program. That's the whole point of that. If you think like, yeah, it made sense. But there's another thing too, which is my money is long and my money is strong and it will come to your doorstep and take whatever it wants.
And this is what we have like everywhere, everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's one or two and they are the most fun stuff about this whole game.
I mean, they do things differently, but it's all the same thing, right? Like, okay, Alabama, can you name a single booster? You might be able to name Paul Bryant Jr.
That's what I was about to say. The most fascinating one, the dude that was grandfathered in.
Yeah, that's one guy you go, okay, well, he was grandfathered in. That guy has had, like, if you look at the most important figure in Alabama football, period, over the course of the program, the person who's had as much influence over it as his father is Paul Bryant Jr. Count the championships, the impact that he's made, and count the difficulty of what he's doing in the modern framework and compare it with his father. And if there's some issue about equaling your dad but not being able to coach football, that should be by the wayside now, because the hiring of Nick Saban and the booster presence at Alabama, you know, they've arguably exceeded what Bear Bryant did there. You know, I think they did it in a more difficult time. I think they did it with greater efficiency. Like, it's every other year under Nick Saban. Just book it. They've won 5 out of the last 10, I think. That's a way better average than Daddy ever managed.
Yeah.
And that's the greatest football coach of all time.
The tricky thing on that is, like, so Bryant's career has 3 eras. A run of almost a decade of pre-integration success, a run of about a decade of post-integration success, and like 5 years in the middle that are awful.
Uh-huh.
like if you go look at his wiki page and then get to the coaching record and you start looking at ranks and stuff like that, there's this thing in the middle and then something like 1971 comes. He's like, mm-hmm. Hey, fellas, come on, man. We got to let this go, man. I can't keep doing this, man.
Mm-hmm. There's that and this. Like, this is, by the way, all covered up when people sort of cover up how much ground they lost in pre-integration and then the conversion to an integrated college football universe. The big cover there was like, well, then he switched to the wishbone.
Like that too.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But you know, like playing to a tie in the Astro Blue Bonnet Bowl in 1970 and having a 3-4 record in the SEC, being tied for 7th, y'all. It's not just the wishbone.
I can't keep living like this. Like that was his thought. I can't keep living like this.
No. Like, hey, listen, do you know how much I smoke? Do you know how much I drink? Do you know what the stress on top of all this is going to do to me? Y'all. And this happens when Alabama does things. It does them quietly. That's their MO. They do things quietly. They do them efficiently, but just as loud in their own way as anybody else. Like the boosters surrounding the Alabama football program, it's an interesting mix of old and new. If you look at it, like there's, you know, big, a family from like Mobile is one of the big boosters, right? And they control like a lot of the interests around the port of Mobile, some old coal money that is around Birmingham. If you want to follow this particular money, coal mines in Columbia. That's what one of Alabama's big booster families is tied up in. It's, like, you know, hey,
the Columbia with two O's?
The Columbia.
Oh.
Yeah. They're tied up in that. And by the way, the family of one of those boosters got tied up in a wild extortion case involving human rights that, again, a little too long to explain here. They got tied up in like an extortion racket with human rights accusations involving coal mines in Colombia. Yeah. The connections that college football has are much stranger than people really even know. The Culver houses are a big family there. And then there's the Bryant fortune, right? Which is all, by the way, also tied up in like the board of trustees.
Yes.
That oversees the University of Alabama system, like for the entire state, which is why Jimbo Fisher is currently at Texas A&M, because Jimbo Fisher at one point, remember, was offered the UAB job. They viewed UAB as such a potential threat. Even the smallest threat is a potential threat for Alabama that they canceled the hire effectively.
Yes.
And made them go get somebody else. And that's why Jimbo Fisher ended up at Florida State first. They would have had him at UAB, but they decided, you know, as boosters who have established an entire system of doing things in the state to the point all to protect Alabama football, right? And the University of Alabama by extension, because they don't separate those two things, by the way, right? At Alabama, the interest of the football program are the interest of the university. And by extension, are the interest of the state. That's the argument, right? That if you just look at the way they've sort of built things in Alabama, it carries all the way through.
This is my man, Spencer Hall. Check him out at Badass Society, SBNation.com. And we are collabing. It's me and you. It's a Voltronic sort of situation where we got this whole series. We're going to do this every other Tuesday through October and November. Spencer is up first. We're going to have Stephen Godfrey of SB Nation on. Man who wrote that great story about the bag man a couple years ago. We'll talk about that. We got Marcus Spears at ESPN who is excited to talk about this stuff, just so you know. He's so excited to talk about this. And Joel Anderson of Slate will join us on this. This has gone basically so far exactly as I would have hoped, because this is all so hilariously absurd.
Listen, man, we didn't even get to Phil Knight wearing a headset, just so he could listen in. Just remember, just sitting in the booth on TV with a headset on, you know, just so he can hear. That's all, y'all.
Money, man. It's wild stuff. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsor, Hims. Also, thanks to Spencer Hall and Banner Society for joining us. Be sure to check out the Meet a Kime show featuring Lenny, her dog. She's joined by USA Today NFL writer Stephen Ruiz. They're going to preview Week 6 and download that and The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.